Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I worry sometimes with Ray, he's like the person in the back of the car craning forward to get involved in the conversation.
Barnaby. He's like the artist at a party that everyone's trying to talk to.
What's Harpo's character at the party?
I think I've left the oven on. I'm having a nice time. I think I've left the oven on. I need a Quaalude.
This week on Walking the Dog, Raymond and I took a stroll with comedian, actor and writer Roisin Connaty and her beautiful Maltese Harpo. I know, it's the dog name of dreams. Now, Roisin and Harpo are fellow North Londoners, so Raymond got to stay on his home turf in Highgate Wood. Roisin you'll obviously know from her award-winning stand-up comedy, brilliant acting performances in everything from Man Down to Afterlife and Channel 4's Game Face, which she created, wrote and starred in, and also her hilarious TV appearances on shows like 8 Out of 10 Cats, Have I Got News for You, and Taskmaster. Roisin and I had the most lovely afternoon with Harpo and Raymond, and we chatted about so much, from her childhood growing up in Camden and the early signs of her comic potential, to the epiphany she had when she slightly randomly tried stand-up for the first time and just knew instantly this was home. We also talked about how she honed her skills as a writer and comic, and how she handles performing nerves by reminding herself to essentially just always be herself. Roisin is just an utter joy, really. She's so warm and generous and hilarious, but she's also got this very gentle, empathetic energy. She's the kind of person you could spill all your embarrassing thoughts to, and you just know they'd be safe. I mean, she'd roast you about them endlessly, but look, at least they'd be safe. I'd also like to exclusively reveal that Raymond definitely caught big feelings for Harpo. I don't want to put pressure on either of them to put a label on things. I do. But, you know, can it hurt to start Googling doggy wedding tuxedos? I really hope you enjoy my chat with wonderful Roisin. Please remember to rate, review and follow. I'll shut up now and hand over to the fabulous woman herself. Here's Roisin and Harpo and Raymond.
Look at this dog's legs, muddy. I love it when you can see they've had loads of fun.
Do you know, I love a dog with muddy boots.
I know.
Hi. Hi, doggy.
You said hi to the dog, but there was a relatively attractive man.
Oh, I always just talk direct to the dogs.
So do I.
Normally I'll make contact. You know where I tell you where they're really... I was in Austria. Lovely place. But they don't have, like, well, my very limited experience... They didn't have a very stroke other people's dog vibe. I also stroke people's dog and they acted like I said, can I have a sip of your coffee? There was a dog and I was like, can I stroke your dog? And they're like, what? And they were sort of gave it to me like, well, she must be hungry. You know, the way you'd hand your coffee to someone, like, okay, I guess she can if you want it that bad. But three times. And they hold their dogs on really short leashes, even in empty spaces. Hello, Ups. You packing up? Are you packing up? Good girl.
Raymond. Oh, I'm so excited for this walk.
Oh, I am as well. And it's so great. It's near home.
Oh, I can't wait.
Imagine if
we
had to go to Hyde Park or somewhere today. Oh, the Jubilee with our dogs. Excuse me, we're trying to have a conversation about our dogs, actually.
Come on.
How have you been, Em?
Oh, I'm good, darling.
What are you doing?
But I don't want to know about me. I want to know about you.
I don't want to know about me.
I'm with the ridiculously talented... When I said ridiculously talented, I sounded like John Travolta when he's about to say, the wickedly talented Adele Dazeem. Roisin Connaty, introduce us to your dog.
This is Harpo Barks, and she doesn't understand how to play ball. So you throw the ball, and she thinks I have to go and get it. So I've just thrown the ball. Now I'm going to try and get it, and then she's going to try and get it. And she's a Maltese. And she's a bit wonky-eyed, but we love her.
She's so gorgeous.
She's a dreamboat.
And when did Harpo come into your life?
When was it? Three, four years. She's three and a half. Yeah. Oh. I got her like a mad time She was looking for that ball. That's like me in my life, looking for things that aren't there. Shall I get her to bark for the podcast?
Yeah, go on.
Will you do a bark?
Film.
Where's the ball? There you go. Miss Hobo Barks.
That is a good bark. You know, Ray's never barked.
Really? Ray.
Ray, why don't you bark?
So well raised.
Come on. He just can't be arsed, I think.
Is that her ball? Has she got a different ball?
Did you have dogs growing up? Because you're such a dog person, you always strike me as. Like, you love dogs, don't you?
I love dogs. We didn't have dogs, but my best friend, when I was a child, Lucy, had a dog called Millie, and she was like a staffy, and I adored her like she was my own dog. So I always really, really loved dogs. We lived in a flat and we just couldn't have one. But lots of my friends, like, you know, had bigger houses and stuff, all had them. I've always just, I mean, you know, really, really loved dogs. I like it when they lick you. I like it when they jump up on you. Like, you know, when you're out and they go, sorry, they jump up. I think, oh, good, they've jumped up. Like, Harpo doesn't go up to strangers. But yesterday I met a dog, another dog actually called Millie, in this field that we're going into. And she was a yellow Labrador. And then she just jumped up on me and, like, rolled over and gave me her belly straight away. Like a little hussy. But I was so happy. And her owner was like, I'm so sorry. And I was like, no. Like, that's my favourite bit.
I quite like the interactions with other dog owners, you know, with the other dogs. Because it's almost like you're getting an interaction with someone, but it's quite contained. It's like there are boundaries. What's yours called? What's yours?
Have
How
you ever
old?
Had someone blank you? Just completely blank you. It's the most painful thing when they act like, who's got time for this? And you're like, I was just making conversation because our dogs are talking.
I've had situations where people have said, I've said, hello, how lovely. And some man has just gone, come on.
That's exactly, you couldn't have articulated it, but that's exactly what I mean. When you're like, oh, what a cutie, are they having so much fun? And they're like, okay, Jacob. And it's like, you're not there. I remember once we were sitting in Harper was in better form, and we were in this field we're going into, and Harper went to walk up to these people with dogs, and they just literally like acted like she wasn't there. And like, I was like, oh, God, you're making her feel like she's in Sixth Sense. Like, I could see her thinking, can they see me? Like, I'd never seen anyone actively ignore a dog the way they did. And they had dogs. But they just made her feel like she wasn't there.
Oh. So
I project quite a lot on dogs. And they made her feel like she wasn't worth anything. And they made her feel like it wasn't going to be okay. Do you want a hand?
Do you want a hand? Are you sure?
Oh, look at this lovely dog.
Oh, they're cuties. Harpo and Ray. Gorgeous. And look at these beautiful babies. Oh. Hello.
Hello. Hi.
They're so cute.
Hello.
Am I going a sensible way?
Yeah, this is the path I would stay on if you're going to go round, that bring you round in a cricket, the
yeah, that's
tent.
What I want, yeah,
yeah, that's the one. This one's through the field. It might be a bit tricky.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much.
No worries.
Yeah, so paint the picture of the origin story.
I was born in Regent's Park Estate, it's a council estate, down in Warren Street, in between Warren Street and Mornington Crescent. They've sort of knocked it all down now for that train, well, a lot of it. And I spent sort of, I went to most of my childhood there, but I also spent a lot of time in Ireland. So I think that sort of sums up my personality, really. Like, it was either manic, like, rah, rah, you know, noisy, or like absolute silence. Should we sit here for a
second? Yeah, let's go on this nice bench.
Nice shoes.
Come on. So it was you and your sister, wasn't it?
Me and my sister, mum and dad. And then, but just me and my sister, yeah. And so, only 2 years apart. So.
And were you really close?
Super close. Super close, but drive each other. You, terror. She knows I've got the ball.
What did your parents do?
My mum was a nurse and my dad worked for Aer Lingus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I always sort of thought that must be lovely to have a nurse as a mum.
She didn't work most of my childhood. She was a nurse when they met, but when we were kids, she didn't really work.
Yeah.
She did a bit, and she, like, did, like, private houses and stuff.
Well, you must have been funny, I imagine, as a kid.
I was imaginative rather than, I think that's so, I wasn't intentionally, I think I was, like, a bullshitter, and, I didn't like it when people didn't believe what I said, but they were wild stories I would have. I knew, my mum had 12 sisters, and so they, all these women, and like, and they were really funny and rambunctious. And I just remember it felt like all of their husbands were one man with a moustache, because they were just all married to very quiet men. And yet these women who were so, they'd roast each other. So someone would walk in and they'd be like, oh, they're blue shoes. Nine of them would go, one of them would threaten to leave because they're not having it anymore. They were very, so I sort of was around women, and so I was always, and they always outdo each other with stories and stuff. So I was always trying to be, and then I'd be like, yeah, and I also, and they're like, what's this kid, she's seven? Why is she making up lies?
What were some of the your greatest hits, lies-wise?
Well, I had to make up, I remember Red Kickers was one of my favourite, I pretended. They were never that great, but they went on a long, I wouldn't back down when I was caught. So I pretended I had Red Kickers, I must have been 9 or 10. And my mum wouldn't get me them. She hated them. She thought they were so ugly. I remember her being like, she'd go into the shop and every time, and she'd consider, and she just wouldn't get this shoe. She was like, they're a disgrace. So I said I had Red Kickers. And obviously then there comes a point where people are like, where are your Red Kickers? I had to invent a life for these shoes. I had to invent every time it came up. And it was, you know, school. But like, are you going to see a Red Kickers? I was like, well, you're not going to believe who came round. My cousin Sabrina's coming. She's only, and well, her shoe went on fire. So it was like this relentless story about the red. But even now, like my friend Lucy, if I'm saying I can't go to a thing, she'll be like, is this Red Kickers? Is that, are we being honest, or is it, are you got the kickers again?
I lied a lot as a child.
Did you?
Yeah, I was quite.
What were yours? I bet they were much more grand than Red Kickers. I bet they were like,
it was sort of lies like that. It was lies to slightly increase my status in the room. And I lied once, and this is because all my friends were a lot richer than me. And I said, someone said, how many rooms have you got in your house? And I said, 17. Because I thought that seemed reasonable.
We were going to go for the 20, and I was like, listen, we're not ostentatious. Let's keep it at 17. We're not going into the 20s here. We're strictly 17. I think it's when you feel less, and it's attention, and yeah. I just didn't have a lot of stuff as well, and so I wanted to be funny in that attention, but not having things and making up. Like I also, because I told so many lies, and I'd go to Ireland, and then once Jazzy B lived in Camden. Remember Jazzy B from Soul to Soul? So it came up in a conversation. I was like, Jazzy B lives in Camden. He lives near me. And then I looked away and we were swimming, and I turned around and I saw my cousin saying to her friend, she's full of shit. I was so hot. I remember like pulling my swimming goggles off, like, what? And she was like, did you see that? And I was like, yeah, you just said. She was like, and then it was like this sort of takedown of like, this is more lies. I was like, no, Jesse B lives at Camden. And then when I got back, I basically found out where he lived. And I was no more than 9. And I just go and sit out on a wall opposite his house. Like, and just sit there until I was like, oh, his wife or someone came out. We're like, what are you doing here? It's like 9 o'clock at night. And I was like, it's Jesse B. And she's like, no. But she was like, you need to go home, it's too late. And I was like, oh, this is a nightmare. And I told her my story. I was like, I need some evidence of Jesse B. And she gave me something. But I can't remember what it was. It's like a picture or something. But like I had evidence that.
Oh, I like her.
Yeah, she was sweet. She looked really worried. Like she was like, what is this child?
You're basically saying, can Jesse B come out to play?
I was literally like, is Jesse B in?
So you didn't have pets because it wasn't practical?
No. We had cats.
Oh, you had the cats,
We had cats, yeah. So we had cats. Where I lived, it was very, the houses were very, like, everyone's house was, like, my friend's house, like, so when I think back, like, I was just always, we were always in each other's houses. So, but I remember, like, once we just opened the window, like, Nance, just shout over. Like, it was just crazy, imagine living there. Like, if you weren't us listening to that. And then we'd go in. So I always felt like Millie was my dog because I was always in that house. It was a really, I don't like glamorising poverty. Because yeah. There was a lot of that, obviously, but there was a sense of community. And there was, like, and kids could play together and, you know, and it was central London. So it wasn't like, you felt very connected, you know, to the world still. It didn't feel like, you know, in sort of, so that's what's good about England is that these council estates are sort of in the mix, not like in Paris or wherever they're on the outskirts, you know, 20 miles from the city. I think my parents were immigrants as well, which now sounds wild because they're just Irish. But in those days, it felt a lot, it did feel like having quite different, because they were, you know, the IRA times and stuff like that. So it felt like I had sort of very Irish parents, and my name. So I do think that was a weird, even though it was lots of Irish, I went to a Catholic school, you know, so there was Irish kids there, I guess, but like my, the estate, there wasn't that many. So I felt that was sort of stood out, you know, which that sounds crazy now because it's so like not the same time. But I did feel like, oh, I had maybe like that sort of, you know, my parents weren't from there, you know. And my mum, I think, really struggled on the estate, because she was not from that. They both weren't. They're both from the countryside, both from like farms. And, and so they didn't have that. I was always like, why don't they enjoy it here? You know, like, and they were really unhappy there, you know. And so I think, you know, obviously, if you're not born in, in the city and you go to an estate when you're from like, you know, a farm and countryside, my dad was like on the lakes and stuff. And then it, I think they found it quite stressful, obviously, you know.
What qualities, what do you think you got from your mum and what did you get from your dad? Like, if you had to pick something.
I think my mum is maybe one of the funniest people, unintentionally and intentionally. But, like, she's a real clown. Like, she knows, like, she can come round a door and, like, and do a face, you know, and she's, like, nearly 70. But she's got that timing. You know, I the other day... I said, don't be rude to me, I'm a dreamboat. Like, she was being me, and then she went, shipwreck more like, just left the house. But, like, she's very, my mum's got a very clowny.
Yeah.
And she's very imaginative. My dad was dry and had, yeah, really bone dry, really funny, but very different. Like, very much more, you know, like, he went, to, like, he just felt, he was a, just a bit drier, and he was much more well-travelled. Like, he'd worked in Germany and lived in South Africa and stuff like that, so he had a lot of worldly story, you know. Like, he was very much like, the world is big and aspirational. My mum wasn't that. My mum was sort of not unaspirational, but my dad was very, they didn't want me to drink on the pub on the estate and stuff. My mum would, like, when I got into my teens, just like, you know, sort of, there was a kind of, yeah, my dad was sort of like,
standards.
The world is big and you know, kind of there was a, my dad was very cultured, considering, you know, where we lived. But he travelled and worked all around the world, and so I had a sense of curiosity, which is what I'd say I got from him.
And when did you get that moment? You know, I remember asking Matt Lucas, I thought it was really interesting, you know, that thing when you think, oh, this could be a bit of a currency, like being funny. And he talked about when he was in the dormitory and he was making, he said, I was doing impressions of the teachers and everyone just started laughing. And that seems a really common theme. I hear that a lot. Like, it's something at school where you think, oh yeah, was that, did you consciously seek that out, or do you think you just knew you were funny?
I think there was a few beats. I think school was one, there was a currency of it was a in my house, it was a tension. I saw it being used as a thing to break tension. I remember being at my friend's house and her mum was talking about her friend. They were adults, and she was bitching about her friend. She was like, I'm bloody, and she was, you know, really. And this woman, she had a very distinctive hairstyle. And that she still has, so I can't give it away. It was just a sort of mad, I could get why it was an irritant. It was the first time I sort of, I hadn't even noticed that I thought it was weird until my friend's mum was talking to her husband. She was like, and that bloody blah, 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 blah. And she was going on. And then I thought, now's the time. And I did an impression of her friend, sort of out of nowhere, just cold. And I went, oh, and I wasn't even meant to be listening. I was 11, maybe 12. And I did it. And she, I remember she had a cigarette. And then I did this impression and she just went. And it was so, but it was the shock, I think, of this child doing an impression of this woman. And it was a good impression. And I remember thinking, and if I was like, I don't know, people who didn't laugh. And my mum was depressed when I was a child, and a lot, you know, without speaking all her business. Mm. But she had, and I, to make her laugh as well, I used to always, that was the thing I'd, I, and I'd have to find ways. But when I surprised her, and then she laughed, it was like a real, I was like, yes, there is a way. Like, it's, you know, there's always a way. There's always a way to make someone laugh.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Harpo's trying to get to play, but she's also trying to protect her ball. But she likes the big dogs.
What is that dog, Roche? Is it a husky collie?
Oh, who's it? Hello. More doggies.
Oh, I love those dogs.
Hello, doggies.
Hello.
Hello, what's your name?
What are those ones called again?
My granddad had eyes like that, one different colour. No joking. My granddad had one, literally eyes like that. One brown and one half green and blue. Hello.
Hello. Hi, who are these guys? What's your dog called?
Wapple.
Wapple?
Yeah.
Wapple.
Wapple?
In Italian means naughty boy.
Wapple means naughty boy. I know a few of those.
Oh.
Come on.
Bye, Wapple. And were you academic at school?
I did quite well at school, considering my attendance wasn't great for a few reasons, but I was good at school. I was good at English, science and art. Maths was terrible, and RE I thought I was really good at, and I didn't get a good GCSE, and that was a real upsets me. I didn't do drama, which I should have done.
Yeah.
And I did geography instead of history. I mean, at school it's weird because I had the same friends. It's quite so from infants through to the end of secondary school I had the same friends, because we went from the same infants to juniors to secondary school, so yeah. In that way, it was, and we're still close, you know, especially one of them. And so in a way, I remember thinking, like, when I went to do my A-levels, I went to a different, you know, and that felt, that for me was like my, uni, like that, like cult, like I made new friends and new music. Like the friends I had all grew up near me at school, infants, and we would go to Camden Palace, and I'd pretend to like, and I didn't take drugs and I didn't drink alcohol, and I'd dance all night to music that I hated. And I'd be thinking, I hope we can get food after. I really hope somewhere's open. And like, I was just, but I didn't know anything else. And I'd like, and then I sort of went to do my A-levels and I met, who ended up being my best friends. I'm very sort of clingy with friends. But like, I don't know, like they were cool, but not cool in they like art and literature and music. Yeah. And my other friends were amazing and lovely. And we're still really good friends, but they were not that, we had different interests. They like clubbing and they still like, but one friend, she's still like, that's her face, you know? And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Like,
You're a very solid friend, I reckon.
Yeah, I think I'm a, you know, like anyone, I'm a pain in the ass, you know, kind of like everyone, like, I think I'm good in crisis. Like, so that's, I'm definitely one of those people, like, I'm great in a crisis. And people are stunned almost. Like, but I am the person. I'm like, okay, this is how this goes. Like, it's very good. I'm very good in a crisis, and I'm not good at sort of things that other people are like, this is just a day to day. I'm like, I don't know how to do that. But I think morning routines, I feel so, you know, I'm sober, so I don't drink it, but getting my mornings back. But also, like, when I do stuff in the morning, I do like a to-do list. So I'll do like take out the dishwasher so I can start ticking stuff off. I've only started doing this in the last 2 years because I find doing basic stuff sometimes, I'm like, I need to do that so I get into momentum. I've done some things, like, and now I can do the other things. But I don't, things that other people are like, have you literally wrote, have a shower on your to-do list? I'm like, yes, I have, because it's to be done.
Our minds are on other things. I think you're right.
Because
they are. My you can keep your dishwashers. My mum was very, you know, my mum was an actor and very, you know, wake up at 10.
I always think you could be an actor.
Well, do you know what's weird? Because I grew up in that family of actors. So I had a weird relationship with all that, but I do feel I was one of those people that was a bit too embarrassed to admit that I secretly probably did want to perform, but I couldn't admit it because it felt shameful, which is ridiculous.
It's like, I had exactly the same thing. It's interesting. I'm fascinated by people who are able to admit need. Like, you know, I did film at uni, but it was all at the back. And I remember having this moment of like come to Jesus moment where I was sort of watching this movie and we're chatting and I thought, I want to perform, you know, and I didn't apply for drama school. I did theatre studies at A level and not performing arts. I did, you know, all of that stuff. So I was always around it, but I was like, well, no, I don't want to. And I had to do one scene in theatre studies. You have to do one acting bit, not much. And it was The Visit. The scene was like a creepy, nightmarish scene. Everyone's getting on a train, and I was the train conductor. And all I had to say was, get on the train. And the note was, Claire Zakanasin, she's having a nightmare. Everything's a nightmare. Everyone's appearing to her nightmarish. And I went, okay, I got it. And they were like, so everyone's like this, Miss Zakanasin. And it gets to me, and I went, get on the train. And they're like, oh, no, like, it's not, she's having a nightmare. You've got to be like a gargoyle. I was like, okay, I got it. We'll go again. So when I said I want to perform, or like the first time I ever did any acting, my sister went, not get on the train, is it? And I was like, no, I've got over that. But yeah, so I had the same thing where I was like...
Self-conscious.
Yeah, where I said I want to perform and I did stand-up. But that was so riskless at the time because I didn't feel like it would be something I'd love. So I thought I can do that and get my performing... But and I loved it, and you know, it mattered immediately.
Yes, it's like sort of, I'll go for the drummer, not the lead singer, because there's no risk involved. And but then it's like, oh, the drummer's quite nice, actually.
Yeah, exactly. But I felt like it was exposing a need to say you wanted to perform. Felt like it made, when I was at school and people used to be like, listen to me sing, I was like, oh, cringe. Like I was, and I always felt like it was exposing something that I was feel like, we don't want to give that away that you need, because it is a need, I think.
Raymond, you going to say hello?
Hello.
What's that though? Is that a labradoodle or?
No, it's a cavapoo.
Oh, cavapoo.
Hi.
What's the name?
Teddy.
Teddy. Oh, I love the name Teddy.
Hi, Teddy.
Nice to meet you.
And you have a nice afternoon. Nice to meet you, Teddy. Bye.
Bye-bye, Teddy.
Right, good point. Don't take the ball.
I know what I was going to ask you. So after, you didn't initially go into comedy, did you? When you left university?
No, I worked in a fashion company, like a high street fashion company in Camden. And I had a boss there and my dad had died and he was very like saying you need to do something with your life. He knew I was sort of all over the place a bit. And I was like, I was just didn't know what I was going to do. I was a bit like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And also I did have this sort of awakening that I was like, I want to perform, like, all right, I knew I wanted to create more than what I was convincing myself was I'll be backstage and I'll be doing it, you know, which is, you can do, but I felt like I had this, but I wasn't doing any of it. And then I went for pizza in Crouch End. Remember Pizza Bella?
I do.
And went to pizza with Crouch End with my friend Danielle, and only one person it took someone to do comedy. Normally people, like, everyone was telling me, and Dan was like, you should do stand-up. I was like, I should. And we were really drunk on wine.
And how old were you at this point?
I was 23, nearly 24. And I was like, I should do stand-up. And then she was like, you should. And I was like, I should totally do stand-up. And then she was like, Dan says it's King's Head. And I was like, let's go and do it. And then we walked down. And then I thought I could just go on. They were like, no, you put your name down. And I was like, okay, this has not worked out how we planned. I had the courage today. Forget it. And then, obviously, no material. And then, like, 6 weeks later, I think my dad died in interim. Yeah, so my dad died in that interim. So I had this really weird window of, you know, when people die, where the worst things happen anyway. So I was like, what difference is a bad... Who gives a fuck? Like, I was like, you know, this thing that normally cause me shame and apprehension. I shouldn't swear, but who gives a damn? I was like... And then they phoned me up and said, you're on a Thursday. I was like, okay. And I went and did it. And I had no material. I remember I had a bit, actually. How weird is this? About people who called their dogs human names. Yeah, and I was like, you know, I think it was Roger. I was like, you can't. A woman screaming around the park the other day, Roger, I can't find Roger. And I was like, we're all helping her. You know, it was obviously exaggerated and not that original. And then immediately I got off stage and I had this feeling of, like, you know, when you fall in love. But, like, almost like the bad love. I was like, oh no, this is going to be an absolute nightmare, isn't it? And yeah, I'm all in. Like, it felt like that. Like, it mattered. I was like, what happened? You know.
And then you just thought...
And then I kept just showing up. I'd do that gig. I was very... I never... I never This is where my working classness comes in. Here was Jago, God bless her. She kept going, you need to think about Edinburgh. And, I just thought she was obsessed with Scotland.
And she's a promoter, isn't she? Yeah. Comic and like, promoter, yeah.
So she did Amuse Moose. And a few people were like, maybe have you thought about Edinburgh? And I just thought people were obsessed with Scotland. And I was like, sure. I mean, I haven't nailed London yet, so I'm going to keep it, going to keep sort of trying down here for a minute. And then I kept, I never sort of committed to a set, and then I'd write a different 5 minutes. And then Pete Graham at Dancer the King's Head said, what are you doing? And I said, what? He said, you need to tighten up the good stuff. And I went, am I allowed to do that? And he was like, yeah, like you don't. I was like, oh, right, I didn't. Because I thought I'd have to do new material. And he was like, no, you need to get a set together. And you're, so I just didn't work out that, you know, which is crazy. But I'd never really seen, I'd seen a couple of, a bit of comedy before I did stand-up, but not much. Like I'd watched a lot on TV, like stand-ups like Richard Pryor and Joan Rivers and, you know, French and Saunders and stuff, but
Did you have that at home where you would watch certain, like we'd always watch Fawlty Towers or whatever as a family, you know, there'd be family.
Yeah, there was only Fools and Horses was a big, you know, and lots of movies, old movies, Airplane, things like that we'd watch. But one of the things that's really interesting, even talking about influences, sometimes you sort of use, these are the influences, I guess, but I was thinking, like, Blossom. Do you remember Blossom?
Oh, yes, I do.
She was a huge influence because she, oh, the first episode of her show, she does a monologue to her video camera, and it was written by the guy who wrote, like, late night monologues. So she did effectively stand up, and it was such a funny show, and she was so funny in it. Her Hyacinth Bouquet, I've only recently gone over, I think she's one of the great physical performers, and keeping up appearances, I can watch now. I know it's going to happen. I know that the dog's going to bark when she goes down the lane into the garden, and yet still her physical performance. So just, I was really trying to think about women that made me go, oh, that's, because obviously French and Saunders were huge, but there were just other ones that sometimes I'm like, oh, like what did I watch as a child? The Golden Girls, The Clothes.
I love it. People say which Sex and the City character you now are doing, which Golden Girl.
The pilot of that is incredible. Oh, I watched the pilot. But the other day, the clothes are out of this world. They must have had them made for them. But also, there wasn't one primary colour on the whole set. No one. You couldn't see a red, a green or a blue. It, for a whole episode, not one. And it, the world looked so much better in Basel.
So, I love that after that moment, you just thought, right, that's it.
I didn't know it was going to be my job, though. I just loved it. No, I didn't have any sort of career. You know, this is when you need to get your gigs at a time out. It's before the internet, you know. And so I had no links to that world. I didn't know any of it, you know. And so I didn't feel like it was a thing I could. I just thought, oh, I'm going to. And then it sort of gradually became a thing that I was like, oh. I remember I got paid a fiver. And I was like, what's happened? And she was like, oh, there's people in. And I was like, I couldn't believe that someone gave me money.
Oh, I love this dog, Ray.
Hello.
Hello, what's your name?
Is he friendly?
Yeah.
Oh, hello.
What's his name?
Barnaby.
And what's that little one called?
Blue.
Oh, hello, Blue. Hello, Barnaby. You're ever so nice. I worry sometimes with Ray, he's like the one that... He's got this, like, energy of the person, whenever there are other dogs around, because of his size and he lacks confidence, he's a bit like the person in the back of the car craning forward to get involved in the conversation.
No, he's not. He's the aloof...
Barnaby.
He's like the artist at a party that everyone's trying to talk to. You know, he's in a corner and he's just hanging out, just thinking. And people are like, should I go and ask him about the painting of the witch? And there's like, don't bring up the witch. He doesn't talk about that work anymore.
What's Harpo's character at the party?
She's a... I think I've left the oven on. I'm having a nice time. I think I've left the oven on. Has anyone... Can someone... Honestly, I'll relax more if someone... I need a Quaalude.
I remember when you first came on my radar, and I was at the... hello? Do you remember? You weren't born. I was at the... It must have been when you won Best Newcomer.
Yes.
2010, I want to say?
Yeah.
Was that like when things changed completely for you?
Yeah, that was... It was because I was able to go full-time.
Mm.
So that was a massive... And there was no heat around me or buzz around me up there. You know, there was sort of... I was up with a really strong year doing their first hours. Like, I wasn't reviewed till day 15. So there was no, I sort of didn't have this pressure because I didn't feel like people were, I just wanted to do my hour. I was like, I need to get an hour. If I'm going to be a stand-up, I need to be able to do hours of stand-up. And I was proud of the hour, but I didn't feel that pressure up there because I wasn't in play for it. And so I wasn't at home. I'd stayed out and then I'd got, you know, really hammered. I didn't know, and you know people who are like, I didn't know the awards were happening, but that's not me. Normally, I'm not an anxious. But up there, I swear to God, I just had this like peace where I just didn't, I genuinely didn't read reviews, only time in my life. And it's such a good example of what can happen if you don't read reviews. I didn't read any reviews, anyone's though, so I didn't want to discuss anyone's. And I didn't know about the nominations or when people were coming in and out and stuff like that. And I'd gone out the night before and got really drunk and we ended up staying at some house, a few of us, and then my phone died and at 4 o'clock the next day, I eventually got my phone charged and my agent was at my flat. And it was really awful. I took a walk of shame home. And he's like, you've been nominated 3 hours ago. I was like, what's happened? And he was like, yeah. So I found out. And amazing. I genuinely was like, I didn't, you know, I hadn't, you know, I was only sent at a friend's house, but I had no idea. So it felt like very filmy for me, you know, because I was like, yeah, it was a big, big deal.
And you'd been gigging for... what, a good 5 years before
on and off, you know, kind of.
So you're well known on the circuit.
Yeah, and on the circuit, you sort of had to stop for a couple of years. Yeah, so I was sort of in and out of it, really. But what's really interesting is I'm really grateful for the award and what it did for me, but I went and saw other shows, and I went to see a show and I thought, oh, that must hurt. That show's really good. You know, I can't remember who it was or whatever. I thought, oh, you weren't nominated. You know, there's the arbitrariness of awards, as much as they're amazing when they land in your favour.
After Edinburgh, that was when... You started doing a lot more TV.
Well, I hadn't done any TV before anymore. So I did Russell Howard's Good News was the first one I ever did. And that felt huge because it was stand-up. The mic went halfway through.
Were you very nervous? Did you get
nervous? I was really nervous, yeah, because I had a nice shoe. Very strange outfit I was wearing. I was wearing leggings and dresses. This one looks like the tail end of that weird... thing that people used to wear, like when you fit, I don't know, like, you know, you sort of think, I haven't really lived through many fashions, and I'm like, why? But I had a heel, a really nice heel, and then 5 minutes before I went on, I got into this thing of like, I hadn't really worn heels on stage, and I put on these pink Converse boots, and they looked fine, but it looked mad because they're leggings, they looked like really thick tights or something, they looked weird. I was really nervous, but that was, and that went well, you know, overall the reception was good, and I knew Russell, so he was lovely.
I remember again, I remember seeing you on Have I Got News, one of the early appearances you did. And I think that show looked so terrifying.
It used to be terrifying.
But you were just completely yourself.
Yeah.
And very authentic and funny without changing your shtick, I thought. Which is why I thought, you know, that's quite hard to do though.
Obviously, when you first go on panel shows, you're the newest on... this is what it used to be like. So it has changed, you know, in those 10 years, 12 years now. You're normally the newest on, and you're the only woman. And this is what it used to be like on them. And so you've got an audience of people who respond differently to the people they know are funny, who are certified funny. So you'd say a thing, and you're like... and then it wouldn't happen. So then it would throw you in such a weird way because it felt like being at a dinner table, and then, it just doesn't land. And so, yeah, I sort of got... but there are different skill sets to be in front of. You know, it's who you're on with. And I sort of enjoy them now. And if I don't, I sort of have confidence it wasn't me. Like, I try my hardest and prep and, you know, and have... my job is to sort of have fun, you know, and I try and do that. I try and create, you know, have... if I'm on the show, I try and always be like, is this joyful? Is it going to be fun? You know, am I having fun? Do people at home... because sometimes, you know, if I'm really in my head, I should speak to myself, I'm not... in that moment, and then I feel like at home they can tell that there's not a moment, it's just you're trying to get, you know, that panic of, it's hard getting that line between over preparation and it being in a moment, but that just takes experience of doing them. It's just like in life, you know, if you're trying to be sexy, if you're trying to be funny, if you're like that, when it's really like, I've got to get it out in the next 7 seconds because the topic's about to move, you know. But with my accent, it's like, you know, I don't finish sentences, and I've got, you know, quite a working class accent, obviously. I can sound like I'm in trouble when I'm just thinking through, and I don't, because I'm not trying to sound like someone else, like you said, on a TV, where I'm not trying to be like, actually, what I find is, and then you're like, oh, because then you lose your, then I don't know what's funny if I'm talking in that voice.
How do you cope? Sarah Millican has this rule about you're not allowed to think about the gig after 11 a.m. the next day.
That's a great rule, yeah.
What? How do you process if something doesn't go so well?
I take it all very badly. So immediately, like, I've never got to the point.
Those people are like, well, I'm very philosophical about it and I'm very resilient. It's one of the things I take it all very badly.
I do. I don't really have many. I just have to then. I know where I'm going to land. I've never landed. I try and be like, I'm fine with that thing. But immediately my brain would always be like, it goes into absolute, you know, and it's not a healthy thing. Like, you did it wrong, you know, good, it's gone, you're rubbish. It's all very.
Do you spiral? No.
Yeah, I'll spiral after. But then I've got better at shortening how long I'm down there for.
I want to talk to you about Game Face because, I mean, I don't need to tell you how brilliant it is.
Thank you, my
love. Because it really is.
I'm so pleased you liked it.
Oh, it's. I just think one of the. I didn't just like it. I've seen it so many times. I felt seen. And everything about that was and is brilliant. And it's a risk, isn't it, sometimes, I guess, making characters. Showing that vulnerability and frailty, but it pays off because the laughs are bigger, I think.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, totally. No one laughs at a hero.
No.
You know, a real...
Fuck you, heroes.
You need, like... Well, I mean, there probably is examples, I'm sure, but I always wanted to write someone who was like that, you know, kind of... messy and not behaves badly but not an arsehole. Look, the robins, I love it when they come out.
One thing that really struck me is this woman is a total perfectionist.
Thank you, first of all, that's really sweet. I worked and you know, an amazing team, amazing producer and director and stuff, and but in the writing, like, it was really hard because I was, you know, you get this I wanted it to be felt I wanted it to feel as real as it could be for a comedy, but also belly laughs, and that just felt so much harder than I thought when I first started doing it, because every time I sort of wanted to make her sort of believable was someone you're invested in a little bit in her life, then I felt like I had to lose jokes if I could hear the typewriter, so to speak, you know, like, I was like, well, I'm very, very pleased with myself there with that gag, aren't I, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, but well, that means it has to go.
I just think there's an amazing piece of work, and it's one of those things that
Thank
just,
you, mate. You're really kind. That's really sweet of you.
But
really,
it's not just me. I mean, everyone loves that show.
I know. When I'm brilliant. Listen, without being obsequious, but like when people like you, people are really brilliant, funny. Like that's who I wrote it for, you know. And they, like, I'd hate if people were like, I hate the show.
Are you a people pleaser?
Yes, I think I try and. I'm conflict averse, and so until I'm not, if you get what I mean. Like, I'm like, and if I've got no way out, God help you. Like, I'll always leave every situation. If I'm not like rowy or anything like that, but like, I just, I guess, unless it's work, like writing and stuff, I can hold my ground with that a bit, with what I want to make. But I think I do. I really.
But do you?
I don't like people not liking me. I don't like people having a bad opinion of me. That sort of thing, you know. And you know, as you get older, I feel like, oh God, that's exhausting to still have that. So I try to work on not having that as much.
Talking about the sort of just kind of confronting and being truthful with people, I've started to say to people, which is difficult. It's taken me an entire lifetime. When someone says, oh, so-and-so said this about you, and it's not 100% pleasant, and often their motives aren't dark.
No.
They think they're being helpful. Yeah. They think they'd want to know. I just, now, before they can even continue, I just say, it's none of my business what they think of me.
Yeah.
And then move on. Because I know how bad that makes me feel.
Yeah.
Because I know when I have a row with a close friend, in that minute, they don't like me.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Because guess what? Sometimes I don't like friends for a minute.
Of course. But that's so true. And I think that's the thing about gossip. Yeah. You know, I love it. No, everyone does. But, you know, like, but Goldie Hawn, I became, how I felt after it. Listen, I love a safe gossip, like a safe sex, you know, like yeah. with a good friend and, you know, kind of, but when it gets into, I don't know, I don't feel good about it as I've got older. I really don't enjoy it as much. And not in a kind of pious way. Yeah. And I don't know how honest I'm being, actually, because that's not true. I think I do enjoy it, but I don't like the fact that I enjoy it. You know, it makes me feel grubby after. It's like I enjoy things that are bad for me, you know. Yeah. But and, you know, and like I said, I don't want to, I think it's dishonest of me to make out, like, you know, if there's gossip in the room, I'm leaving. I'm not. I love it. I'll pick up, like, ribs and chew through them, you know. And, you know, like, that's... But that's... I'm aware of it now. Like, I just feel like just the energy that you can put around people, you know, or that you, like, if someone says something to me, I'll not be contrarian, but I'll be like, oh, who said it? Like, I'm trying to be like, where's this coming from? Where's it's, yeah. you know, kind of, if it's someone's personal experience, I don't, like, that's fine. I don't mind that. Then I don't, that's gossip. That's their experience and they're telling me. But if it's like about someone, I'm more aware of how I feel after. I think, like, it's bad for your spirit.
Do you know, you're very trustworthy. I think you're someone I could very much leave my phone with unlocked.
Could you? And yeah. I just had to check with myself there. I thought, yeah. I just remember I had an old ex-boyfriend and I used to love him going out so I could read his diary. I'd be excited about him going out. I was like, God, I can't wait till he goes out and get into that diary.
What was it like?
Really boring. It was like our to-do list.
Load the dishwasher. Brush it my was teeth.
The fact he hid it, like it had... anything worth reading in was real. I was like, this?
Hello. Hello, doggies.
Hello.
Hi.
Little Norfolk Terriers.
Oh, they're gorgeous.
Are they Norfolks?
The Norwiches.
Oh, Norwich, sorry. Sorry, Norwich Terriers. Absolutely very beautiful. Fluffy. Raymond, say hello to the Norwiches.
Raymond's coat.
Oh, thank you. Oh, the dog.
Look at his tail.
What are they called, the Norwich Terriers?
This one is Poppy, that one is Bonnie.
Poppy, Bonnie. Hi, Bonnie.
Are either of these two black boys?
No, she's a girl.
She's okay. Raymond's a boy, but he's been done.
Oh, right. She's
in season.
Oh, right. Yeah. No, he couldn't, no offence, but he couldn't be less interested.
Oh, my dog's face. She's been eating.
She's so sweet. Oh, lovely gorgeous. To meet you.
Have a nice evening.
Have a nice evening.
Bye bye. I know what I was going to ask you. I had something I was going to ask you. I really got a very good energy when I first met you, but there's a particular type of energy which I personally put down, I noticed with people who've had, I suppose, experienced loss at some point in their life. And when I say loss, everyone experiences loss, but I mean a life interrupted, you know, which yours was with your dad, because he died far too soon. And I had that with my sister. And I do think it changes you. Yes. And there's a legacy to that. And I think it's an energy I kind of think I pick up on in people. How do you think it changes you when you lose someone before their time?
I guess that bad things happen, you know, and I think as a child, as you get older, you're constantly just, you know, you're trying to avoid bad things happening. That's sort of the, you know, your parents, wait, hop, say, wait, cross. That's sort of the whole thing. And then a thing happens that... you can't stop and you can't prepare for, and you, like, it's so funny when you put it into words, other than you feel more vulnerable and you feel like the negative, more vulnerable and a sort of that not everything's going to be written, you know, that life isn't going to have this shape to it, that you don't get to write an end, and it's not going to be, it's not a script, there's a beginning, middle and end, and it's all going to make sense and this all works out, this, you know. There is a script, but you won't see nowhere near the end. You know, like, new writers come in and your story will make sense. I don't know.
That's so true. And I think sometimes people who haven't walked that particular path, sometimes don't quite get, and I understand that, because it's a weird thing, but it's sometimes still quite visceral for me, and I feel it, only because...
I think a sibling is different to a
parent. Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. And not like, you know, top trumps in loss and all that, cause you know, everyone, you know, but I, when my cousin died and he was young as well, and my aunt had to bury, you know, him, and he's small, like, that felt,
Yes.
Different. The yes. funeral felt different, you know, like it feels different to bury a child. You know, that's like a sibling is. Ray?
Ray, come here.
Where's Harpo?
Harpo! Right behind you.
Oh my God.
I do that 10 times a day.
Good girl.
I do it in my house.
I think one of the things it does do is, and when I have, when I'm heads out of my own arse, is that I remember when it happened, and I had a lot, my mum, some aunties die as well, like my mum, there was quite a lot of around that time, was that I couldn't believe that people were walking around with it happening all the time. And I was like, I was like, oh my God, everyone I've met.
Yeah.
You know, it just really freaked me out that it was this part of life that, and now I have a sort of, I try and be like, God, people are going through so much all the time.
Yeah.
And you can meet this really funny, brilliant, like, you know, you, like brilliant, amazing, funny, clever person. You don't know what's going on in, you know, in their, you know, in their lives, you know, until you, you know, when I got to know you. And I don't know, it makes me more compassionate to people. I think that everyone's sort of grieving, or if you're over the age of three, you know, and even then, you know, but you're grieving, and it can be so many things. It can be a person, it can be, you know, what didn't happen, what did happen. But I think a person, you know, like a sister, like yours is, because, you know, you all speak so beautifully about it in your book, and that feels so much more open-ended.
And I have that sense with her of, we didn't finish the conversation.
That's it. You know, like that feeling of...
And I'm still having it.
Yeah. But I get that energy of what you were talking about. I get that energy. I think you could be, you know, when people say like about prince and paupers, I think you could sit in any room, and that's a very rare thing. I don't know. I think you're interested and interesting, which is... That's normally my two. Some people are very interesting, but they don't care about anyone else. And you're like, oh, wow, very interesting, aren't you?
I feel that with you, though, because you're very un-elitist, and you're someone who's pretty well known. Well, embarrassing, I said that when people were walking past. That sounds like I'm your long-suffering PA.
Doesn't it? Like, I'm like this.
Yeah, I mean, you're very well known, madam. No, but you're very well known. You've got a high... recognisability, and yet
I don't feel any of that, but I do feel like in rooms I don't feel, on the whole, like I've got more social anxiety after lockdown. I got like when I walk into a lot of energy, I'm like lots of people, and I felt like I'd lost, I think I said this to you, like, you know, I'm not normally a clumsy speaker, like, you know, I can be a little bit all over the place, but not sort of, and a couple of times I sort of said things that were a bit clumsy, you know. I was like, oh, I'll ask someone about something, they broke up, and a couple of, you know, and I was like, oh God, I haven't got the energy for this. Look at this.
Do you want to say what's happening?
Ray's climbing over some very small paving slabs, but they're his Everest. You can do it, Ray. Good boy! Yay! Good boy! Yay!
Well done! But fame is not something that... Do you like it?
I don't really notice it. Like, I get it in periods. It's odd. What's strange is my voice. People recognise me from my voice, which I found really weird. So I've had no makeup on and a mask. And I think even if I had makeup on, I don't think they would have recognised me. And then I've spoken and someone's gone, oh, you're that. And I said, how could you tell? And I thought, I must have very distinctive eyes. And very distinctive naked eyes. And they were like, no, your voice. And I was like, oh, that's quite odd. But yeah, I haven't really... There's the odd thing. I just try not to, you know, occasionally, you know, people will take a photo of asking or whatever and stuff like that. But it's so rare. It's so not... There's so little of it, of me being like, oh, my God. Yeah, someone's recognised me today, you know. It's like, there's not, I don't have much, I guess I don't go to many show busy things. I've got some friends, but I only hang out with people I sort of genuinely get on with.
Oh, I've loved our walk.
It was
enjoyed it. Come on, Raymond. Well, we're going to say goodbye for the purposes of the podcast, but because I believe in full disclosure, well, we're going to be serenaded out for the end of the podcast by Wella, 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 the slightly problematic summer night.
Oh God, yeah.
Did you get very far? I'm sorry.
Oh my God,
we don't approve of this. Hey, I'd love to walk. Harpo, can you give me a hug?
Can you give Emily kisses? Can you give Emily kisses?
Kissy, kissy. Yes. Bye-bye, Harpo.
You give me kisses? Yes. Ray. Ray.
Bye-bye, Harpo.
Mwah. Mwah. Give me kisses.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that, and do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.